Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. Get ready to hear stories of someone brave enough to bear it all. Let's get naked.
Welcome to the Naked Podcaster. This is Jen Taylor, and today I'm with Robert Timmons. How are you today, Robert?
Excellent. How are you doing, Jen? Thank you.
Awesome. We've talked before, and it's so fun to reconnect this way. I get to learn a lot more about you. Jump in. You have pictures, paintings behind you, and
yes,
you have your main site where you do business. And so I'm going to let you dive into that.
Well, the pictures behind me, currently what I'm doing is I'm the painter of millionaires, or I tag myself painting millionaires. These, you know, it's the funny how I got into this. We won't go too far right now. We'll stick to the front, but I started painting these guys because they bring value to my life. And I wanted to find a way to bring my art into what I was currently doing, which was personal development, building my mindset, so I can teach people that as well. So I started painting these millionaires, as I called them, who were doing a lot of talks, a lot of video. And then I realized, not only do I want to become a really good speaker like these people, because it brings so much value, but they are speakers. And I didn't even put that correlation at the beginning of what I was doing. So it was almost like I was manifesting, you know, these people coming into my lives, giving me value and tips, and they become like virtual mentors to me. Now, I've given away four of these to these actual millionaires. So four millionaires own their own personal painting that I've created, that being Ed Milet, Jesse Itzler, Eric Thomas, the ET hip hop preacher, and Grant Cardone, the multimillionaire real estate guy. So they all own it. It was funny. I went to Grant Cardone's office over in Florida when he was having his 10X conference. And I walk in and I'm like, hey, just wondering, you know, I just wanted to come and see the place, right? And the security guy looks at me and goes, hey, you're the painting millionaires guy, right? And I was like, boom.
Wow.
So the whole key at the beginning, I created a hypothesis on these paintings because of past experience that we'll probably get into later. But my objective was to control the direction of these paintings. And my hypothesis was to, you know, where are these paintings going to take me, in a sense? I'm going to start them and I'm documenting the journey. And by seeing someone actually recognize me was a part of the journey. It was like something, it brought it together. And I was like, yes, I'm so happy you said that. And we had an instant connection. He was showing me the whole place. It was all security. And he showed me everything. He got people to tour me the building of Grant Cardone's office while they're all in Vegas. And it was just amazing.
Wow. So, I mean, I want to dig a little bit deeper into what it feels like to be recognized. It happened to me once in a weird way where somebody recognizes you and it's so unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
What was your feeling when that happened? Were you like, yes, I've arrived. This is great. I've been waiting. For me, it was kind of like, wow, I almost didn't know what to do with it in that first split second.
Well, this case wasn't the first time. That's why I love that it popped into the journey again, because this one was a planned journey, right? So the journey prior to this was when I painted about the ocean. And I had a lot come into that. And that was brand new. I wasn't controlling it. It was all passion and free flow and learning and building skills. Where this one, I'm like, wait a second. Why don't I copy what I did, but in a controlled fashion, and see where it takes me? Because if it worked once, why won't it work again? And when he actually said that, I was like, oh my God, it's working. It's coming. I'm starting to get known for a different series. I'm starting to build a different network. I'm starting to, you know, build myself in a different vibration level. It was really fabulous. And honestly, you don't get used to it. You know,
no.
when you're humble and you're doing what you're doing, it's exciting. It is exciting. And, you know, I thanked them. I'm like, I'm so happy you recognize me. That's really cool. You know, I showed them and we, like I said, instant rapport. And that was cool. It broke down a wall of mm-hmm. someone I had never met, right? And it mm-hmm. got me into doors that I, you know, that are secured, and I didn't even have to ask. He just invited me in, like he knew me. He trusted me already. I gave a gift to his boss, and he even told me right away. He goes, he loved it. He goes, I don't know where he hung it. He brought me into a place where he hung paintings, but it wasn't in there. So I don't know where he ended up hanging it, but it's somewhere. Grant has it somewhere. And I thought that was pretty cool to be able to be a part of, you know, where I always say when I give my paintings away, because I've given a lot of paintings away all over the world. And I always say I set them on their own life, their own journey. Mm-hmm. And to me, like, I put a lot of time and effort into those paintings from research right up to completion. And I just feel that there's so much of my energy in there, and I just let it go on its own and see where it takes it, you know? And years later, sometimes I hear, hey, I remember I bought this painting from you, or I got this, I won this at a fundraiser, or, you know, something along that line. I just think, oh, it's just so cool to have so many pieces out there, and that they've raised, some of them raised tens of thousands, you know, thousands of dollars for charities and stuff.
That is, well, with art, you have the ability to see some of the journey sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes. And how cool is that? That yes, you kind of breathe your life into this, but then it becomes its own. It's like a kid. It's like having mm-hmm. a child, and you get to see a lot of the impact that makes. That's powerful.
Absolutely. Like when I did do the ocean, there was one orca. Cause I did the stories of the animals pretty much, either in the wild or in captivity. And one was the one that sadly had killed a few people in captivity, Tilikum over in Florida. And they did a documentary called Blackfish on Tilikum. Uh-huh. And prior to that coming out, I had already been a part of all that because of the journey that that art took me on and the connections that I got involved with. But I painted that orca free. Because I had that power. So I painted that orca out in the ocean, free, you know, the where it should have been in my eyes and in the people that I was connected with from that journey. But yeah, you're right. You know, you do have a lot of power in that because I'm able to take that visual and create it. So it becomes a visual to other people. Like I think it's Picasso said, I dream it, then I paint it. So I do my mm-hmm. painting twice. And yeah. There's so much truth in that.
I love that. I want to know about you giving them away. So that's a comment that you made. And I know some of them you've donated for auction and some of them you've sold, but that's not, I don't know if you know this, but giving everything you do away doesn't make you money. Tell me about that. Like, and then I want to go into the inspiration behind the people a little bit more. So tell me about giving these away.
Absolutely. Well, let's, do you want to go back into the art, the ocean stuff and giving it away? Or do you want to just talk
sure.
about these?
Sure. I mean, there's got to be a process behind that. Cause most people, I mean, I think you should be valued for your work and payment as part of that. So, but there's other ways. So I want to connect that part.
Well, because I gave them this time as a gift of value, right? For the value that they provide me. And I understand the word of the action of giving brings you 10 times back. So and because I understand that is because of the journey I was on with my ocean art. And I gave so much away. I gave my time, I gave my energy, I volunteered, I built networks and, you know, raised tens of thousands of dollars for organizations that were out there already protecting the ocean. And I was giving to fundraisers and I was even hairstylists, you know, if I'm giving them prints here, I got some prints. Hey, you said you like dolphins here. I got a print of a dolphin painting that I did here. I got a shark one that I did and I got a whole, you know, crap load of them. And I'm like, just handing them out. I'm handing them out. And I'm like, I it's my energy, right? And I love to have my energy everywhere. You know, if it makes someone smile, it makes them feel good. And people love getting gifts and people love art. Now, mind you, they don't like to pay the artist, you know, what they're worth. I've, you know, recently put out, a guy asked me to paint him with less actually. And I said, you know, well, these take 20 plus hours,
right?
You know, sometimes up to 30 hours. And I do not put my time into someone, especially the commission. Yeah. You know, I'm thinking, let's say $100 an hour, for example. So that's like $2,500. I said to him, $2,500, if you want one of these of you. Right. And it's not that I'm trying to get the money because I want to put the time into painting more of these than painting more for other people. Right. But I would definitely do it if someone's willing to, you know, to respect and honor that they're going to get a good quality painting that they want, that they're requesting, not that, oh, hey, I'll buy that one there. Right. And you know, and he said, thanks. He didn't go forward with it. And I thought that was cool. Good. Now I got more time to put into my series and keep the journey going, because I do understand the journey of the giving part is going to bring amazing like world in front of me. Like I already see it. I already see it happening. And because when I did the ocean stuff, I went to Japan to document the slaughter of dolphins there. Right. And did I, when I started painting, that was for the sharks, right? I saw a documentary called Shark Water. People can find it on Netflix. I think it's still there. Good friend of mine made it, who I became a good friends with, Rob Stewart, who sadly passed about 4 years ago, almost. He passed away continually documenting for the sharks, young age, 36, sadly died over off the coast of Florida. But I went from that to, you know, into running a chapter for one of these organizations, building, organizing, building events. I think I had 70 events in 4 years that I ran it. 70 events.
Wow.
That was just for them alone, on top of other events that I created. I was doing 4 or 5 events a week. You know, like I was just like, boom, boom, boom. I was just like, people are like, how are you doing this? I said, I don't know. I'm loving it. And it was passion. Passion, because I enjoyed it so much. I never got paid for any of this. I was even buying their merch so I could wear it. Right?
Wow.
You know, and I was having a lot of fun. I was having a lot of fun. And it brought me to Japan. People paid for me to go to Japan to document the dolphins. So here I am giving paintings, giving my time, giving everything. And now the money's flowing back to help me go give more. And that's kind of what I've seen. So when I get into the painting millionaires, my whole objective is to paint myself, become a millionaire. So now I moved into the United States because I did all that up in Canada. And I thought, let's see if I can reverse this. You know, I'd like to, you know, earn money to help more. So if I can find a way to create a journey that brings money in to, you know, provide for my family, provide for, you know, so I don't have to go out and do anything, you know, that I don't want to do, that I continue on being this, you know, in the leader fashion. And that's kind of where I'm at. So I'm at, like, I just finished the 9th painting here, Jay Shetty. And I'm working on Lewis Howes is my next one. And I don't know where this is going to take me, but it's already given me a lot of great things. Like one of my paintings, Jesse Itzler, I now got a 12-month mentoring with him, you know, starting tomorrow.
Yay. So I
dug so deep into these people that I've gotten part of their funnels, got in their marketing, got to see what they're doing, what are they offering. I have to go deep into it. I've read Ed Milet's book, Max Out, and I implemented some of his stuff into my life, my world, and it's working. Like, it really is working. What these people, you know, talk about, it's not just preaching nothing. They're actually doing it, and it's worked for them. And so I'm just in an honor to, you know, be able to be a part of their lives that they don't know I'm a part of, right? You know, I'm attached to their words that they're putting out, that they're amplifying out. And it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
It sounds like a thank you. It's a gift, but you're saying that there's this list of people that have been so inspirational to you, so motivational, so have made such a big impression on you. It's your way of telling them thank you and giving.
Absolutely.
This. And I love that. I love that. So you're getting in touch. You get in touch with the people in some way or another after you do the painting, and you let them know you have it for them, and you figure out a way to get it to them. Is that how it works pretty much?
That's how it has worked. Yeah. That's how I got 4 of them. It, believe me, it takes months.
Yeah.
These guys are busy. Yeah. They're millionaires, right? Like, you know, Jesse Itzler was the first one. Cause he answers his DMs on his own on Instagram. Boom. We started having a conversation. He gave me who to contact, and they told me where to send it. And I've been in contact with them since. And like I said, now I'm a part of his programs because they're so much value. He puts a ton of value, like a ton. And the funny thing is, one thing that I always needing was to live off my calendar. I know everybody who runs a business, you know, who or has an organized life, who, you know, is really up there. lives off the calendar, even if it's with a virtual assistant. Well, here I am in his one course, and does he not have another course coming out that he just starts to talk about? And it's called the Big Ass Calendar Club. It's finding out how to build a calendar with all your wanting life experiences. Because his whole thing is about build your life experiences, because you only have so many summers, right? So get in as much as what you need that you've been procrastinating, you've been dreaming of, you've been, you know, a year's gone by and you're like, damn, I meant to go to the mountains, or I meant to go, you know, to the cottage, or I meant to do this with the kids. Well, he makes you plan it. You have a, he calls them a masogi. You plan your masogi, and then you work on it. You know, a lot of them are ultra runners and stuff that are in this. So I'm feeding off their energy now too. So it's taken me to such a higher level of vibration. And I'm just, like I said, I'm enjoying this ride. It's like just fucking amazing, if I could say that.
Yeah. You know, you're on the Naked Podcast. You can say anything. So let's go back a little bit, because you mentioned Canada and I can hear your accent a little bit. Not much though. It took me a while to hear it the first time we talked. And then all of a sudden, I know you said something and I was like, wait a minute, that sounds like Canada. So take us back in time, because you're in the U.S. now, correct?
Yes.
You work out of the U.S. Okay. Yeah. Where did this whole journey begin?
Well, see, that's the cool part. So like I say, my art created my life. Mm-hmm. This is pretty much what I'm going to do with my paid talking, my speaking and helping people regarding, because I find visuals as an artist, I'm all very visual, and I put a lot of emotion into what I do, which is another additive to your vision to right. make them manifest. And like I said, at the beginning, I didn't know any of this. So I moved to Toronto, Canada, a big city. And you always see those movies, right? And those movies are like, you know, they go in there and then they come out and they got like mohawks and stuff, right? Like they just, the big city changes the person. So I thought, I'm going to move to the big city and I'm going to see what it does for me. I'm going there to push my art. I want to learn how to get art in the gallery. I want to learn all these things that I thought, you know, what I thought at that time, but you don't know what you're going to find as the journey and progresses. So to make a short story, you know, a long story, really, you know, more shorter in that area, was going to Toronto changed my life. When I saw that documentary, like I said, I started to fight for the sharks. I started painting about the sharks, the shark story. I started promoting it to my friends and family because I didn't know anybody else that would care. Well, they didn't care either. And they started thinking I was part of some Greenpeace. I was going crazy. Mm-hmm. But I realized now that when you do things that are different from who you are and around, it means you're changing into something greater. I do believe that, because people don't know what you're doing. Right. And here I have a different thought. I'm full of energy. I don't know where it's going. I just know I'm going with it. And I paint this painting. I thought, okay. And Facebook was new then. It was like 2008. Mm-hmm. So I started networking on Facebook. And I started networking with people that were interested in sharks around the world. And I started grabbing on all these people. And it was like, oh, wow, there's people that care about sharks. And I didn't, you know, this is all new to me. So I started grabbing, you know, getting part of groups and understanding stuff. And I started following an organization, Sea Shepherd, who are whale wars later on. They had one slow ship. They're up there. They're doing stuff. And they were ones that were being advocates for the sharks. And, you know, and then as I progressed, I started painting about whales. I started painting about dolphins. I started painting about a whole bunch of other animals and their stories and what was happening. I was like, holy crap. I became a vegetarian. I was like, oh my God, I can't be eating these guys. Like all I was eating at the time, I was single bachelor eating like tuna and vegetables and rice. That was pretty much my life, right? So I'm like, oh, I got to cut out the tuna. So I started eating eggs. And then as I got involved, I felt like I needed to get on the street. You know, these are all the stages that were at the beginning of this growth. And I'm like, shit, how do I get on the street? How do I get out and talk about this? How do I go further? And someone introduced me to an animal rights organization in Toronto. And that's probably when my life really changed. So they told me who they were. I started inviting people to their group and they wanted to meet with me. So I go and I meet with them and sitting down. They're all vegan. And I didn't even know what vegan was. I just moved to a big city. I've been there a year. And I'm like, I don't know what vegan is. And they go, are you vegan? I said, vegetarian. And I thought that was like amazing, being vegetarian, right? They go, oh, well, to be in our group, you got to be vegan. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to be in your group yet. And they go, well, we would like, you jumped our group. You doubled it, almost tripled it within a week. And we haven't had anybody in our group for like 2 years, they said. I said, well, I got a large network around the world. And that's what I did. I just popped them in. Well, they go, well, we want to make you the director of international campaigns. I said, what? I said, well, let me think about that. Well, you can think about it. We're going to make you it. And if you don't like it, then you can, you know, stop. Well, let me tell you, these people supported everything that I want to do. I learned about veganism. I became a vegan all because of my art. Like, you got to go back to the source. The art started all this, right? So I became a vegan. And then I started, you know, fighting for the sharks. I started speaking. I started protesting. I started doing everything that I wanted to do. I wanted to get out on the street. I started going to universities. Well, to get a little further, I met my wife from this. She was an ocean advocate, right? And because I was so high up, videos being recorded about me recording videos so I can watch and learn and promote the information that I was doing, made me kind of like a very high up person, well-known person in this world now. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, you know, a movie star in a sense, but in the advocacy of animal world. Because I was doing interviews, I was doing live news, I was doing blogs, I was in documentaries. I was a part of so much because I wanted to be like, oh, you want me to talk there? Doom, I'm there, right? Anything to get the message out, because I knew awareness is the key to change, right? When people become aware of something, then they know they have a choice and they can either choose to go that way or not, but it's a choice. Well, my wife, you know, started connecting with me, and within a couple months, we started dating. She lived in Florida. I'm in Canada. She flew up to Toronto, and we spent a weekend together. And within 6 months, we were engaged. Within a year of meeting, we were married, and we're almost at 9 years married now.
Yay.
Yeah. So she moved up to Toronto. We tried that a little bit for a couple of years. The immigration didn't work out. So I moved down to the States, and that's went from Florida to California. Now I'm in Texas in 5 years. So I've traveled across your country twice in a month, moving everybody from Florida to California. That was I'm all about adventure. And that was definitely a big adventure. She flew and I drove, you know, a trailer and the animals and all the furniture. It was crazy. It took me, I think, 6 days. But that's it all in a nutshell. There's a lot more in there, but I didn't want to continue on that forever because there's a lot involved in that first part.
Yeah, that got you to where you're at now. And then
right.
What I want to ask you, since we're on this thread, what happened that you stopped doing the ocean stuff? This is a big shift from all the ocean advocacy and painting, and you were known as the artist for the ocean.
Yes.
And now you're painting millionaires. Can right. you bridge that gap for me?
Well, see, that's, as an artist, you always go with what you're working on, what you're passionate about at that moment. I'm still an ocean advocate. I'm still all about sharks and animals. I'm still vegan. I've been vegan almost 12 years now. It'll be 12 years in October, maybe even 13. I'll have to look at that. But yeah, I'm still vegan. I'm still like an advocate. I still have the network. And of course, when you change your focus, you lose people. So people are looking at me like, I liked your ocean art. And I said, well, it's still there, right? It's still there. I said, you know, you don't have to know. And people are like, I don't know why you're painting millionaires. Like, what's that all about? I said, because I'm learning from them. They've become my mentors. They're my virtual mentors. And it's what I'm passionate about. And like I said before, I had to find a way to keep my art in the world that I'm doing so I'm not spreading myself thin. Mm-hmm. But yeah, when I left, I was running a chapter in Toronto. And we did our last event on 2015, There was 300 people in the audience. I'm, you know, the leader of that organization, of that chapter, and I'm up there talking and handing it over to some new people that I trained, right? So I kind of like went from there and I moved down to Florida. And when I decided to come down to Florida, I thought, it's time to get an online world going. That was the transition, because I knew that what I was doing was taking a lot of my time, but I was making no money to survive, especially that now that I'm married. We never had any children at that moment, but now we have a child together. He's 3 years old. And so I'm like, okay, I need to start transitioning and start learning how to build a business online, learning how to market, learning how to do all that aspect. And that's the transition of what I went through. And as I was learning and reading, you know, listening to Jim Rohn and, you know, Bob Proctor and all these people, only a year ago, I started painting these guys. Mm-hmm. So like I was still doing ocean stuff up to that point. I was, you know, painting portraits of these ocean conservationists. I painted Rob Stewart. I painted Rick O'Berry, who fights for the dolphins. Rob fought for the sharks. I've painted Paul Watson, who is part of Sea Shepherd, who fights for all ocean animals, but mostly whales. So, and now I've transitioned over to these people, and it's building a whole new network of people in a different manner. People are like, wow, these, you know, more entrepreneur people, people that recognize right. these people that are being changed by them as well. So yeah, it's a whole shift, but I was expecting that first off, where you put your attention, you put your energy, and where that energy goes, it connects and attracts different type of people, you know, that are similar to that. So that's kind of, yeah, I think that's what your question was. That kind
it
of
was. So it was basically, it's always a woman's fault, right? You got married and you had to move. So that was the job transition. And then it transitioned everything. And that makes sense, because that gap, that seems like this massive chasm, and it's absolutely really not. Let's go back into growing up you have this determination for success, but it's my opinion, I'm going to push my opinion on you, you can correct me, that you kind of are open to different things, and you just kind of put the energy out there that you're open. Like I'm an artist and I do these things and I want to move to Toronto. But when you're presented with things and they feel good to you, you just kind of go with it. So you sort of roll with the punches. You're fairly laid back in that manner. And you,
I am now.
Okay. Back then, maybe not as much.
Back then was a different world. I believe every decade's a different life, right? Kidding. Like your adolescence, you know, your childhood, adolescence, and then even in my 20s, those were three different decades of life. But I kept pulling luggage in from each one until I started learning how to start getting rid of that luggage. And a lot of it was, you know, being forced into things to change. I always say, you know, you can keep doing things until the universe kicks you in the ass and pushes you forward. Because I know when things happen drastically, it's like, oh shit, I should have listened. It was telling me a year ago I should have done it. And now it's actually telling me it's too late. It's time, you know, in a good way. It's always been a good way. So yeah, I grew up in a low-income government housing area in Brantford, where Wayne Gretzky, actually born and raised, the hockey player that everybody knows. I wasn't born there. I was born in Cape Breton Island, I'm an island boy, over in Nova Scotia there on the East Coast, where people talk a lot faster, and you definitely know there's an accent there. And the whole life is slower, but they talk faster. my mom, single mom, she raised three children by herself. She went from Nova Scotia, took a train with all three of us to leave an abusive relationship. I remember being on the train, sleeping under the, you know, chairs and stuff. Brought us back, lived at her father's, my grandfather's, for a bit. Then we got into the low-income housing, where it was all, you know, mostly single moms, or if the husbands or boyfriends are around, they were in and out of jail. So there's a lot of abuse, a lot of fighting. I learned from the boys of the neighborhood. So in a way, you know, I guess if you think about it, I was learning to be a womanizer in a sense without realizing it, because it was all about who's getting the girl. you know, and how you're going to get the girl kind of thing. That's how it was kind of that then. But I was also shy. Funny enough, my wife sees only knows me as being the talker, but I didn't talk a lot. And I was very, and I've been told that I've been like, what's that saying? Hopeless romantic or something like that. I've been called that before a few times. So that world was so different, and it was such a dark cloud. I'm 5'3", so I'm not very tall. And I had to stand up for myself quite a bit, or, you know, I was going to be beaten up, right? You know, bullies are easy. You know, they pick on the weak, but if you're not weak, they stand back and they leave you alone. They want to be friends with you, to be honest with you. So I created a really good reputation that I needed to have in order to survive. And it stemmed into my high school. It stemmed into weekend brawls and fights and stuff. And, you know, to the point where people didn't even want me at their house anymore. That was a whole different person. I've meditated and forgave myself for being that person and what I did. But I wasn't a bully. I need to, you know, straighten that out. I stood up to people that literally could probably beat me up, but because of how I am and how I stood up, I was able to either stop it, diffuse it, redirect it, or I'd have to defend myself. That was a different world, like I said. And then it stemmed into, we had a goal in our neighborhood that at 16, you can quit school.
Wow. So
I quit school at 16, right? Who's to stop me? And it was legal. So I always talk about numbers. It took nine years to get my high school, right? 9 years to get my high school. And that wasn't 9 years every year, right? It was skipping. Like grade nine, I must have skipped 8 months of school. And they had the truant officer after me. They had people calling. I would come back every 2 weeks. I would take off to, you know, north of Toronto by myself at 13. Because friends moved there, and I'm like, oh, well, I'm going there. I'm 13 years old, get on there, the subway. And it took like 3-4 hour drive for a 4 hour trip just to get there. And so a lot of things were happening there, and they thought I was on drugs. They were like raiding my buddy's locker. He was getting mad at me that they kept, cutting his lock, looking for drugs, but I wasn't on any. I was just like, just not interested in going. Right. So I made it through high school, took 9 years, kicked out.
Wow.
But I made it. I got my diploma.
Why did you, if you could drop out at 16, why did you take, I mean, 9 years is over double the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
why did
when
you?
I quit, I was sitting at home and I was bored out of my mind. I was bored. I was like going, I cannot deal with this. And I couldn't get a job. Because if you didn't have grade 12 back then, you thought, oh, you can't get a good job. And I couldn't even get a job at our local McDonald's, even though they hated us from our neighborhood, but I couldn't even get one there, right? As a dishwasher, I couldn't get one. So I went back, but I talked to the principal or the vice principal, and he said, you got to prove that you want back. So I went to this school where I had to do correspondence. And he wanted me to get 2 credits, and it didn't matter where. He goes, there's a school here if you want to go to, but you got to prove that you want back in. I got those 2 credits. I got back in. I got on the honor roll. I started, you know, rolling in the, you know, high 90th percentile of math and everything. I was like highly focused. I had everything set up to go into, I was going to go into university. I was going to become a physiotherapist was my objective. But then I got into a fight in high school. As much as I fought outside of high school, I got in one fight in high school, and not any school wanted me. They kicked me out and no school wanted me. I had to go to another town if I wanted to get all these OAC credits, as they call them, my grade 13 credits to get into university. But yet I already had my grade 12. So I said, you know what? Just give me my diploma. I'll go to college. So that's kind of why I went to college. But I went to college. College took 6 years.
It's partying, okay. We can drag it out a little. Partying and what?
Wrong course. Like things I weren't passionate in.
Yeah.
You know, I always find that the school didn't guide me in a way that they would say, hey, why did you become a dental hygienist? They make 50 grand. I'm like, I don't want to go be a dental hygienist. So they were directing me to, this is how much they make. Why don't you go do that? So I always know, even to today, you don't push yourself towards where the money is. The money comes no matter where you go, as long as you and love what you do, right? We all want to love what we do. We don't want to go in somewhere and not, you know, love it. So yeah, you are digging out some deep, dark secrets here.
So university, 6 years, I don't think that that's abnormal. And I have to say that I think it's a ridiculous notion that someone at that age has it all figured out. And I love that you said that they didn't give you the direction, because I think that that's a huge fault in the education system. And you're talking about a different country, mm-hmm. because you were in Canada at that time, that it's like, okay, you're 18 or whatever. It doesn't, and even if you're older than that, so you're an adult, go figure, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I mean, how are you ever, you don't have enough life experience to even know that. So absolutely. You're right. They don't give you direction, but you got through. What was your degree?
Well, it wasn't a degree, because I went to college. They have 2-3 year courses. So I was trying 3-year courses. I was trying 2-year courses. I ended up with a 2-year environmental science technician course, right? That's what I ended up with. And, you know, I was doing 2 different, I even went to another college, right, within that 6 years. So the first 2 years were really bad. I did chemical engineering. I did electronics engineering, testing them out. And I always say that I failed my calculus in college, but then I learned calculus by doing the second year at antiderivatives. I learned derivatives by antiderivatives, because it's all the same, just backwards. So I'm like, right. It was an interesting time.
Yeah, it is. Now, after college, then... Oh, the other thing with numbers that I want to make sure I didn't forget that's written down is getting your green card, but we're not there yet. After college, is that when you decided to move to Toronto?
That's when I started working in another city. I finally got out of my city. My whole objective was to travel. I always had a dream of, I want to travel, but I didn't know how to do it, right? I'm stuck in this low-income area. People had really, didn't seem like they had dreams of anything. Right. A lot of people I knew went to prison, died in prison, committed suicide. You know, I seen all that. I knew about it. Like, we even seen someone leave our, you know, place because they hung themselves in the basement. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of that. And I was like, you know, and the people that did make it through were the ones that were being, in a way, sheltered by their family, right? Putting them into the football and stuff. And I was never able to get into any sports because my mom didn't have the money. Like, I'm a lefty, and I wore a lefty glove and threw with the left hand when we played baseball, because I didn't know there was a right glove, right hand glove. Yeah. Right? So everybody had lefts because they're all right handers, and I'm a lefty. So that's kind of how my life played. If you're not aware of it, how do you know, right? If no one's telling you, hey, why don't you go get that glove? When I finally got a right hand glove, I'm like, oh, this sucks. I just used my left because I was like a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But I need your guidance here on this.
Your biggest goal then was to get out of the place that you had been raised in. Were you close with your mom? Were you close with your 2 siblings? Was that part good?
Yeah, my sister's the oldest, my brother's the youngest. Me and my brother don't talk now. However, we were definitely close when we were younger. And my mom, she had 4 jobs most of the time to, you know, make ends meet. So we'd go to, you know, where she worked as a waitress. We'd go there and get food just to see her. She worked at a gas station. We'd go there and hang out when she did nights. She worked at a bingo hall. Now my mom's 71 now and still working a factory job for full time. So that's, you know, that's one of my whys, is to retire her too. So,
yeah. Yeah. So you want to get out. That's, and I understand that. You know, what's interesting is you said the East Coast of Canada. I'm originally from New England, and I cannot tell you how much I have to slow myself down when I talk. And I don't really have much of an accent either, just like you. But if I get mad or excited or any, like the hands start coming out and the accent comes out a little bit, and yeah, you get really loud and really fast, because if you're loud and fast, then apparently good things happen. I don't know. But is it, that's so funny that you're East Coast of a different country. mm-hmm. and we're still the same. That's great.
It's
an East Coast thing. So you did eventually move to Toronto. Where did your passion or ability to do art come from? And when did you know that?
Well, I grew up, when I went to school, my mom put us in a Catholic school.
Yeah.
And I think it was grade six. Like, I seen a lot of people, you know, drawing, and I thought this other guy was a better drawer than me because he would, you know, create things that look cool. And even today, I don't just draw, right? Like, if I'm going to draw something fast, it's going to be more stick-like. Like, honestly, like, I can do a quick Garfield or whatever. But if I need to draw, I need to focus. But so I remember doing a portrait in grade six of the Pope, Pope John Paul II or something like that. And I was, like, blown away, and everybody kind of seen, wow, he's got art. And my sister, she was very artistic, but she didn't go with it. My brother, he was artistic, but he didn't go with it. But I continued because I found love for it. So it came natural, and I just kept evolving that skill over and over. But I didn't start painting till like 2004, so only 16 years ago. I started painting. So prior to that, I was doing like sketches, a lot of sketching, no color. I wasn't doing color. And I was doing designs for tattoos for people and creating signs. And since the color, I've done murals. I've done a lot of portraits, a lot of other stuff. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun. But yeah, it's been natural right from the beginning.
And you saw that you had a talent for it in sixth grade.
Pretty much. Yeah. When I was able to do a portrait, a sketch of the Pope and look like him.
That's phenomenal. So that was kind of always part of your life. It's not like all of a sudden you woke up and figured it out. It's kind of always been there. That's amazing. When did you transition to Toronto and the start of that journey?
That was a wow. That transition, I was early 30s. So it was after my college, I transitioned up there, got a job, and I had a three-month-old at that time, my daughter, who's now 18. And we kind of relocated up there to try and, you know, get something going. And, I was just north of Toronto at that time. When I moved into Toronto, that was later on. That was 2007 when I moved into Toronto, when I did that focus that I told you about. And then I saw that documentary.
What did you do before that for work? Did you use your degree? Did it tie into the film that you saw in Toronto and your desire to do that? Or was that a completely different, was it a total shift?
Oh, it was completely different. Uh-huh. Everything. Yeah. Like, my whole soul is the environment. And I think that's why when this came about, I was able to really transition and fight for it. Just, it gave me so much energy. I still am blown away with how much. And it was clean energy. You know, you didn't feel tired. You just did what needed to be done, and you just did it. And I'm still trying to tap into that, you know, in a way, because it was so energizing.
What was it like switching into that role when you saw the movie, and then your whole life you had to become a vegan? I think that's really amusing, by the way, that was one of the caveats to you joining this.
Well, group. I didn't become a vegan right away with that. And they didn't care. But of course, when you're around those people,
yeah,
they say, hey, why aren't you a vegan? I said, well, because I'm learning. I said, I never even knew that word before. And I was honest to all of them. And I think they, you know, and I was a big guy too, you know, for my size, I was always worked out and stuff. So I was quite large in comparison to some of those vegans, where, you know, people say plant-based, you know, you're thinner and stuff. But I think it was my old days, how I just provide my, you know, my character. I don't take anything. I don't take crap. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to tell me what to do. You want me to be a part of your organization. This is who I am. But I'm willing to learn and find out because I want to be a better person. And that's why I went vegan. It was by choice. And it probably took 3-4 months after. We were doing a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I think it's time. The last thing I ate was sushi. And that was it.
You still remember that?
I do. It was like October 2008.
Wow. You moved into a speaking, I guess I'm trying to understand, the art is one way. You can be real introverted and shy and quiet. And I'm not saying that you are, but you can be an artist and be pretty well known. But you stepped into a role where you were a speaker and you were leading. How different was that for you? How did you make that transition?
Oh, see, that's a good story. Like I said, there's a lot I left out because there's so much compacted into the Artist for the Ocean story. But that was a quite incredible. So here we are fighting for these sharks, right? And I befriended a guy from the university, a professor there. So he was able to get me a showing of the Shark Water documentary that I wanted everybody to see. And the organization, that animal rights organization that it helped me, Animal Rights Collective was what their name was. They, you know, helped me organize it. They've done a lot of this stuff. So they were such a big backbone to whatever I wanted, which I love them for that. There was no question. It was just like, okay, let's do it. This is how we do it. And I'm like, this is just incredible. You know, you think of an idea and they're there to make it happen. And it happens. It was like, you know, manifested. So here we are. We have our day before our night, right? And I get an email from the professor. And what our night was supposed to have was he was going to introduce, we're going to have the documentary, and then we're going to have a speaker after. It was going to be this lady. She was a marine biologist. She was going to talk about her thoughts and roles in with the sharks and the conservation and everything about that. Well, he emails me and he goes, just letting you know that the lady canceled and I've put you as the speaker. And I'm at home and I'm reading this and I am freaking the fuck out. Like literally my heart is pounding. And I'm like, I haven't spoke since college. And even in college, I realized that I could speak with a photo. I could speak about a photo forever. But you tell me to read things and speak, you don't got me. I'm going to be nervous. I'm going to be sweating. I'm going to be stumbling. But you give me a photo, I can speak for an hour about that photo if I know about it. So I thought for 3 minutes, it literally took about 3 minutes. And I said, fuck it, I'm doing it. I got to do it for the sharks, right? Like I was so fucking empowered to do what I could for this animal because, you know, we were out there winning. We were creating a nationwide win at this moment. We were pushing it across Canada against shark cartilage and stuff. And it was about shark fin soup. So I said, all right, I'm doing it. So the night comes, we got about 90 people in the audience that showed up at the university, which was fabulous. It was a fundraiser at the same time. So we were raising money for the Animal Rights Collective that was there. And so the show ended and I walked up and I think, you know, breaking that ice was the best thing that ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. Because if I didn't have this night, the rest of my journey would have never happened. This was the pivotal moment that when I stood up and I went to that mic and it took about 10 seconds to break that ice, I never stopped talking. I was talking about what we were going to do, what we're doing, talking about the documentary. I was saying, you know, this is our objectives and we need all your support in a sense. And that started me on the next day. We had 70 people show up for a protest that we walked through Chinatown regarding shark fin soup and stuff. And we're talking middle of winter up in Canada. It was minus 17. So that, that's gotta be about minus something Fahrenheit. You know, it was cold. We had the police blocking all the roads and this is my first time ever doing this. And I'm on the mic, I'm heading this, you know, 70 crew behind me and we're chanting and we're doing everything for the sharks. And I was the first one to bring ocean stuff to this big city too. So it was very original that way too. So I thought this was exciting and it started me on such a journey, but that's how I got into speaking. That's how I started leading. That's how I started to understand how to organize. And then organizations were coming to me to help get their message out, right? When you start stepping up into a rank in somewhere, people start saying, hey, we need to find out what this guy's doing. He's talking our language. Let's see if we can connect with joint ventures and that kind of action. Right. So yeah, it's a great story. I'm glad you asked that question.
Well, you're making some pretty big pivotal shifts. And those aren't easy. And speaking is one of those things that, like, it elicits more fear in people than anything else. And when it doesn't, it just doesn't. I don't understand that because I love to speak. But I do get that when people walk out on a stage, it can be super intimidating. So I'm trying to connect some of the dots with you. I want to know how your wife found you and what that whole process was like. I mean, I understand it was through, cause she was doing some of the same thing. Yeah. I want to hear this story.
Well, it's kind of funny. So there was an event, an ocean event in Florida, because I was hanging out with a lot of people. I was flying back and forth to Florida.
Okay.
With a lot of ocean marine biologists and stuff like this. Right. And mm-hmm. we're doing a lot of studying on the ocean. And so I seen this event and pictures of her were just fabulous. I was like, wow, there's a beautiful lady right there. So I, at the moment I had two profiles. And the reason being was when you're very active on Facebook, especially back in the day, even worse now because they got so many things in place, you get your shit banned fast. Mm. So when you're inviting people constantly, you get your shit banned. Like I knew the limits on everything. I knew okay. where to find links to invite 5,000 people into an event, right? There's things back then that you could do that. But after a while, Facebook gets a notice and they go, whoa, shut you down. So I had two profiles. So I started liking the photos that she was in. I started, you know, checking her out, seeing what things were. And then I friended her. And then I friended her on my other account because I was building up two accounts in case I got one shut down, right? And she sent me a message because at that point, a lot of people are within that world. She was getting hesitant on like, are you real?
Oh.
Or are you one of those trolls in a sense? Because a lot of people seen them as trolls. They come in, they just kind of like, you know, they got fake profiles and stuff. And they're just trying to gather your information and trying to attack you and stuff. And I just started laughing. I said, no, it's me. I'm both. And I had to explain exactly what I explained to you on why I have two. And she definitely understood. So then we just, as soon as we started talking, I tell you, we never stopped talking. Like even to this day, like, the only person that really texts me is my wife. She texts me probably 10 times a day. Like if I'm out somewhere, she's texting me all the time. Like we haven't stopped for 9 years. So it's kind of how it happened. It happened quite fast. I, being an artist, maybe your listeners might like this, but she likes sea turtles.
Okay.
So I designed a sea turtle ring for her, an engagement ring. It has a sea turtle on it, had a blue sapphire in the shell of the sea turtle. And I presented it to her after 6 months and proposed. And then when we were going to get married, she said, well, I want a band that fits that sea turtle. I was like, oh, okay. So I went back to my jeweler who I designed it with. And she goes, well, maybe we could do a separate ring and this and that. She goes, because that in the back, I had the legs, had the tail. Mm-hmm. And she goes, I don't know how we can do this. And my wife says, that's the way I want it. So I went back to the drawing board and we were able to get one that locked right in. And we set it up and we put three more sapphires in there. I didn't do diamonds, you know, watching a lot of documentaries and stuff, seeing blood diamonds. And I was like, let's kind of see what we can do. And the blue sapphire just matched who we were.
Being now we all want to see a picture of this ring.
Well, I'll definitely have to send it to you for sure.
That is awesome. What a great story.
Yeah, that was, it was fun. It was exciting.
Yeah. Well, and you guys kind of found each other then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was someone that understood what you were doing and why you were passionate. How hard was it for you? I know, and this isn't a negative about your wife. I know she tried to go there and couldn't. And to stay together, you had to move. I get that. That's not her fault. But how hard was it for you to let go of that life?
Meaning her going back to the United States?
Well, you moving back to the United States and giving up your job and training people and handing over the reins. How tough was that?
That was, it was exciting, first off. Mm-hmm. I thought it was cool to go to another country. I'm thinking like I still need to do my test so I can get my citizenship here and get dual citizenship, which I'm excited about. But I think a lot of it was tough with my daughter because at that moment she was 13.
Yeah.
Me and her mother didn't have much, communication. So things weren't the best in me and her mother's world. But my daughter's always been with me, and it's been tough on us, on the move over. During the immigration was tough on me and my wife. Absolutely. And, you know, it was 18 months where I was able to fly down here and there, but that was a long stretch that went longer than we thought. And at the moment, the government was pushing things off. Like when something should have taken 5 months, it took 10 months, right? Until we got your, some of your leaders here to intervene. And then the next week we got what we wanted in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. And then we got a lawyer involved, but yeah, it put a lot of strain on my family from, you know, relationships with my daughter, relationships with my wife at that moment. But I was going, I already, you know, even to my mom's like, you're not there yet. And I'm like, Mom, I'm already there. My head's there. My body's there. My emotions are there. My life, my wife's there. I said, I'm there. And then I keep telling her, get a passport. Well, you're not there yet. So then when I get over there, I'm like, Mom, did you get your passport? She's like, not yet. I'll get it soon. I said, Mom, I'm already here. So yeah, I had to live in my mind to endure the stress and pain that came along with that.
Now you're there. You're painting millionaires. Let's tie things together at the end, because holy cow, what a crazy journey. How do people get in touch with you? Tell me that. Who is your ideal client? How are you finding more people to paint? I mean, I know that there's a lot. There are a lot of them. So how do you narrow that down, and how can people work with you?
Well, I help people build a blueprint. I call it the CEO, you know, clarity, energy, optimism, you know, things that really focus and create a blueprint where it, I call it a manifesto, in a sense where I read one every day, nights and days, and it's of everything that you want to be. It's, I'm always about who are you becoming. And I've taken it from my art, because what I did with my Artist for the Ocean was the blueprint of who I am today. And what I'm doing now is going to be the blueprint of who I'm, where I'm going, right? I've changed things, but I've taken everything that I've learned. You know, like I said, I gave things away, but it what I got back was skills. I got back public speaking. I got back organization, leadership. I got all these amazing skills when I look back at it. And I'm like, and it changed me, you know, into a whole new person. I talk all the time now, right? According to my wife. I got like a coaching course. I'm getting into speaking, you know, for paid speaking in a sense. And that, I'm kind of wondering where I'd put that. I really like to talk to art students, for an example, to teach them the power that they have and how it goes deeper. Because even though I was an artist, I didn't know the power that I had. And my life has changed every time I focus on my art first. And then my life changes, because there's so much power in visualization and putting emotions into these paintings, for an example, in my case, and really deeply learning about these people, reading their books and implementing it and understanding that it's going to take me somewhere. And I always see the end in mind when I do things. So that's kind of, you know, where I'm at now, but, and I also I also help speakers with marketing, because I'm a messenger marketer, and I know that's the way of the future. It's a very different direction, and I'm testing that right now just to kind of see, because artists are like real estate agents. They're all about referrals. They're all about, you know, old school stuff, right? And I'm seeing that as it may be good now, but people want to scale. People want to, you know, get a little bigger and less work in the business and start working on the business, right? And that's where messenger marketing happens, because it's automation and it's creating a conversation with your people that, as you come in. So that I'm playing a lot of different ways. And the reason I got into everywhere I'm at is because it was a problem within my life. So I had to learn it.
Right.
And marketing was an issue when I was trying to launch a business. When I first came into the States, I was trying to launch, funny enough, I say to my wife, I said, look at that Peloton. That's kind of what I was trying to launch back in 2015, was an online workout business. right? And I had like yoga instructors, boot camp instructors. I had all these instructors that were following and we were helping raise money for animals. So I was always connecting myself to the animals. But I learned off Shark Tank by, I think it was Damon John, he said, build your business first, then start bringing in your cause. Like focus on getting right. the thing running and then start bringing in. But because I was so engulfed in the charity world, everything was about helping the charities first. But there's a different mindset there with the charities, right? And I've tried to even help them with the marketing messaging and none of them will take it. I don't know. It's so new. Like it's three, four years old, but it's jumping into WhatsApp. It's jumping into DMs on Instagram. Messenger marketing is going to be really big in the future.
That's awesome. And I know everybody can find you because all your social media is linked in our show notes. What's the easiest way to find you though?
Well, you can Painting Millionaires on Instagram is a good way. Painting Millionaires yeah. on Facebook is another one. Quite easy. You can send me messages. You're definitely going to go into one of my messenger chats, but it's all good. They'll take care of you. The Robert bot will take care of you.
Robert, thank you so much for being on today and sharing your story. I really appreciate you.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate this show. This is awesome. You dug deep.
Good.